The Hard Yards on Sports Show. Brought to you by Innocent Super Smoothies. On the Bright Side.
To the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. Antonin Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
When Ringrose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score.
Hello and you're very welcome to The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady and we have another great show lined up for you today as we look ahead to the Champions Cup final in Bilbao next weekend. I'm joined in the studio by Pat McCarry. Pat, how are you?
Pretty good, thank you.
And Kevin McLaughlin. Kev?
Good morning.
Good morning. And a little later we'll be joined on the line by Mike Prendergast. It's a nice sunny weekend, wasn't it? It's lovely. Summer's here.
It was. Great weekend for rugby. and an even better weekend for weddings. Myself and Pat were both at weddings and
keeping an eye on the rugby from afar.
From afar. Great beer drinking weather. Like
that's our excuses in first, right? There's more to life than the Oval game. Sometimes. But the Pro 14 playoffs began in earnest, and Munster found it a little more difficult than some would have thought. Certainly, the bookies. It was with 20 minutes to go. It was only 17-16, and one try came from a little bit of Zeebo magic. Mm. One try came from a very opportunist piece of work by Hooker Reece Marshall, but a gorgeous sidestep to go through off the end of a line-out. But they won 2016. They're through. Smallish crowd, it should be noted.
Yeah.
Just over 10,000 was the official attendance, but a lot of people say it looked smaller. But that's job done for Munster. Not brilliant, but they set up that semi-final against Leinster.
Yeah, and that's a RDS then as well.
RDS. A lot of people will have assumed it would go to the Aviva, but it can't. Aviva's already booked. So it's in the RDS. So your tickets for this, get them. Get them early. We'll have another little talk about that later. We might have tickets. But yeah, in the RDS, this is going to be a proper, proper atmosphere because Munster haven't been to the RDS for a good while.
Yeah, it's going to be unreal. But yeah, like Edinburgh are good, you have to remember that. Like 2016, I mean, it's a win. It's in a playoff game. Pretty disappointing, that crowd. You'd think they get something more, like closer to 20,000 for a playoff game. It's a bit disappointing for the Pro 14, I'd say.
Saving up for the big trip to Dublin, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I think like everyone in Munster just assumed it would be a walkover. But Jesus, thank God they got through, because it's going to be absolutely mouthwatering now, this game in the RDS.
Yeah. I mean, we did say that last week, that Edinburgh have been on a really, really good run. They won 15 games, which joined with Glasgow was the most in the league. Mm. So they're good. Well done, Richard Cockerell. It's something I think we'll return to in another episode. You know, some of the very good performances of this season, his managerial or coaching performance certainly is up there. In the other semi, Scarlets walloped the Cheetahs.
Yeah.
Good sunny day in Parky Scarlets. It wasn't much of a contest. It was great to watch. It really was good to watch. Steph Evans' second try is brilliant. If anyone hasn't seen that, get to the Pro 14 video channels or social media channels. It's a fantastic, fantastic try. So, yeah, Scarlets are in. We thought they could do it. They were 14-point favourites and it didn't. It was never, ever close. But well done, Cheetahs. Good season.
Yeah, they were decent. I think the only thing that they'll be left disappointed with, you know, it was great to have in that final six to have a South African side there. So it'd be kind of happy enough with that. But just the way to go out is a bit of big shame. So it's just going to be so interesting to see now over the next few months who they come back with next season. Like, and are they stronger again? And, you know, for being in there for the first year, all that travel, all the difficulty to go out and impress so many people, they're only going to get tougher, I'd imagine.
The commitment on the South African side is that they will get stronger each year.
Mm.
And I think there'll be trouble if they don't, because I think the chasm will get wider. But I think there is a huge commitment. I think the South Africans, I think there's more talk in the press now about more teams joining the league in 2021. I think that's great. Like franchises like the Sharks and some of the bigger franchises getting involved now. Mm. I think it'll add prestige to the club. And the South Africans seem desperate to get out of the Super 15.
They definitely do. And the Sanzar released a statement overnight, our time, said, you know, any comment around anyone leaving the current setup is definitely not real, not right, not correct, unsubstantiated. We use whatever word you want. But yeah, we certainly, the Pro 14 have been signalling for a long time that they want more South African sides in, and that there are more sides interested, and certainly a lot of people are running with this, that there are more sides coming, that it isn't talk anymore, that they are coming, and it won't be next season but the season after they'll come along. But yes, Cheetahs arrived in Pro 14 as a lot of people's second team in Super Rugby because of the way they play, and I think they've gained a lot of fans in that first season here. Nice little moment actually, because Clayton Plumage is the fullback.
Oh yeah, he's heading off there.
Dotted down his try and got a big cheer from the Scarlets fans because he's playing for them next season. So he took it well. So what are we facing now? Two semi-finals. It's the weekend of the 18th, 19th of May. So Friday the 18th, Glasgow face Scarlets. That's an evening kickoff. And then on the Saturday in the RDS, it's Leinster. We've already been anointed 8-point favourites over Munster. And then on the Sunday, now confirmed, is the Ulster Ospreys playoff.
Oh, yeah. Yep,
because if you want to get the miracle route that we went through last week, none of that happened. so it was the long shot, well, did not pay off. And Gloucester are going through as either the winner or the runner-up of the Challenge Cup final. They're through.
So is that on in Ravenhill, the Ulster?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is, yeah. So that's 3:05 p.m. on the Sunday. Yeah, the winner take all, that one. So that's good.
Yeah, Osprey's pretty brutal so far this season. But
they had their moments. And during the Champions Cup, they were weirdly good.
Yeah.
You know, so again, on their day, they could cause Ulster problems. But that'll be Trimble's. You know, there's a lot of people leaving.
I wonder whether they will Trimble out for that. Like, probably just hasn't played enough rugby.
Probably not. Yeah. You know, even like with Bowie, he was on the bench, wasn't he? Like, so. Although maybe
just the emotional uplift you can get from something like that, like the guy's last game.
Yeah,
you wouldn't know what to do. But
his admission that he was getting outpaced by, you know,
kids. 5-year-old. Yeah.
Probably not the best sign.
Yeah.
So I did mention tickets. So keep an eye on our little channels here. We will have tickets for the Leinster Munster match, and they are going to be gold dust because that is going to be 18,000 people all the season ticket holders, and anyone from Munster trying to do their damnedest to get in. Pay attention. We will have tickets, but the big game next weekend, Champions Cup final. I think it's time to call in some French reinforcements. Mike Prendergast is on the line. Mike, good morning.
Morning, guys.
Where he is now, attack coach for Oyonna, French Championship. Last league games were played this season. What is to come for you guys?
We have a playoff on Saturday, so they changed the structure this year. And basically, it was top 14. Obviously, the 14th last club go automatically down. And this year, there's a chance for the 13th place. So, fortunately enough, I suppose, when you look at us up to about Christmas, we were 9 points behind Agen, who was second last. And since then, we actually kicked on. We won a lot of games, a couple of games away from home, and gave ourselves a fighting chance. We had actually a chance on the weekend to still stay without playing in the playoff, but unfortunately we came up a good bit short. We played in Cast, and unfortunately first half we were in the game, two or three opportunities to score, didn't take them, and then second half we unfortunately they really put the foot down and rolled us, being honest with you, you know. So we have more opportunity to stay alive, as I say. So we actually play Grenoble, my old club, on Saturday over in Stade des Alpes, Saturday afternoon in a playoff, winner takes all. So Grenoble were beaten yesterday by Perpignan in the Pro D2 playoffs. Perpignan have went back up to the top 14 after 4 years, which is great to see a club like that, especially in that area, that region as well. You know, it's a bit of rugby, French rugby. So for French rugby, it's a good thing, and hopefully we can stay in the top 14 with them for next season.
All right. Well, good luck with that one next week. Is there much talk about the Champions Cup playoff, or has it been all top 14 and Pro D2 this week?
I suppose over the last couple of weeks, it's been Pro D2. It's the business end of the season. Top 14, obviously, in Pro D2. But obviously next week, we're the only game in between the leagues that's on, and obviously that's followed by the main event for Europe, which is the Champions Cup final. So obviously having a French team in it, being Racing have been very consistent this year, especially from kind of October on. A lot of teams are everybody's talking about them over here, you know, and they've just huge depth. They actually only came 1 point behind Montpellier, who obviously were knocked out earlier in the Champions Cup, so their sole focus was just the top 14. So to be fair to Racing, they've done it on both fronts up to now, you know. So they're in a home semi-final in the top 14, and obviously next week they have the big Champions Cup against Leinster. So yeah, I know the Champions Cup this year, because there was a few French teams were left in still in it come the quarter final. It probably had more focus on it than previous years, you know.
We talked a little bit about this last week, but the loss of Maxime Machinot for Racing, as a starting point for the conversation about the game itself, how big a loss is that from your perspective?
It's a huge loss. There's no hiding behind the fact he's, I think he's really developed his game this year. He's a physical nine, and I think previous he was a running threat, but he used to like to look for the contact. Now he's more of a link nine, so he still has that running game, and he's passing actually, even though it's quite unusual because he's a bit older, but his passing has actually improved an awful lot this year as well. And I think he's more of a subtle player now than what he was. He's obviously always had quite a good kicking game, and probably the way they play, I think Racing have looked to, I suppose it's like us here, when you have a 4G pitch, you use it to your advantage, or you try to use your advantage, and that's by playing high tempo. And Racing, I suppose when you look at them this year, the thing is they're trying to do that. For me, they're not the 80 minute team in being, I know traditionally, and I suppose people outside of France look, and when you're targeting French teams, you look at them and say, right, they're not going to last the pace. That game has changed now, because it's, you know, obviously the bench is a massive thing, so a team like Racing have strength and depth, and they can bring on a bench. But whether Racing can play for the 80 minutes, I've seen them this year where they play kind of in spurts, where they play even against Munster, and I know you can say that they could take their foot off the gas, but they've been like that this year where they play for 20 minutes. I remember the game in Paris against Munster this year, where they came out of the blocks and they were incredibly strong for 20 minutes, dropped off, Munster started to get a handle on it. And they actually finished then quite well because they had that bench to bring on, you know. So the whole thing about Racing is playing for that 80 minutes, whereas they've come in and out of games for 15, 20 minutes. And when they play at high tempo, I think that's where Machinot has excelled. And I think he's a type of nine, like most nines. You like to play on the front foot, and he's adapted his game in that way where now he's starting to put players through holes. He's running, but he's not looking for that contact, you know. So he will be a huge loss for them in terms of just his leadership as well. You know, he's a guy that's been there a long time. He's really bought into everything they've done, along with Swarzyski, albeit Swarzyski mightn't start, but just to have that, you know, that experience, their home players. In saying that, you look at the nine that they've brought in this year, and it's probably another thing to do with Machinot's performance, because Iribin, he's come in from Brive this year. He actually started the year, he took over from Machinot. It's probably put a lot of pressure. I'm sure Machinot sat back and had to think about it, and obviously has pushed his game on. So he's a different type nine. He's got a very, very strong kicking game, but he probably lacks that subtlety and that decision making that Machinot has brought to Racing this year.
Mike, Kev here, just a question. So Racing are looking at Leinster now and looking at that kind of semi-final and the way they played against Sarries in the quarter-final, like, it is intimidating. They've been really clinical, mm-hmm. and really good knockout rugby. With your French hat on, like, what are they going to target? When they're looking at the way Leinster have been playing, what are they going to target? Where are the areas that you believe they'll go after next weekend to give them a good chance of winning?
Yeah, I think the first thing is, I think they know they have to be in the fight, as I said, for 80 minutes, and it's something that they're short at the moment. And you look at Leinster at the moment, and it's the opposite. They can just stay in that fight for 80 minutes. And I think what they'll probably look at, some of their own strengths as well, and their strength this year has been their defence. In top 14 of the best defence. Even when you talk about defence, you look at their defensive line-out, it's the best in the Champions Cup. They look to disrupt that. Scrum isn't as strong as an area. But I think they look at their own strengths, as I said, defensively. And I would imagine, you know, it's about Leinster defence is obviously very good, but I think with Leinster's shape in attack, they can cause more problems than probably other teams can in the top 14. And I think Racing would be very aware of that. So I suppose...
Mike Andy here, for the ignorant among us, when you say Leinster's shape in attack is different from what the top 14 might bring, what do you mean by that?
They just, I suppose, they, from a point of view of a lot of French teams, we'd be quite structured for a French team, and we get a bit of pay out of it, because in France, if you tend to hold on to ball for long multi-phases, you get good gains out of it. And I think that's what, even when we played Racing at the start of the year, albeit we didn't win, but we caused them problems by holding on to ball for multi-phase, because the way they defend, they get off the line very, very hard, of huge line speed. Ronan O'Gara obviously, you know, implemented their defence structure, and they've continued with that, and it's been quite successful for them this year. And what I was getting at from a point of view from attack, that if you have, you know, a decent structure, you manage to hold on to that ball for over 6-7 phases. A team like Racing, because they get off the line so quickly, you're looking for them to get off the line, to come back, to get off the line. After 5-6 phases, that becomes tiring, and they naturally start to narrow up a small bit. And I think that's where Leinster can get good gains, I think, on the edges, by holding on to the ball, as I said, for multi-phases. With the way they're set up, Leinster, they hold width, and they've good micro little plays within how they set up. So, in other words, they fill the field quite well, and they're very disciplined what to do. The breakdown is the best in Europe, and allows them to hold onto the ball. So I think that's where Leinster will make gains this weekend against Racing. And Kev, just to follow up on your question, where will Racing? I think, as I said, their line out is very, very strong, Lions defence, so they'll go after that. And I think they'll potentially look to hold on to the ball and deny Leinster a ball. You know, that's the path they'll go down for this weekend.
Yeah, it was just because interesting you said earlier that the Racing like to play tempo. I think they need to actually slow the game down a bit, because Leinster really relish when the tempo's high. They're super fit. They like quick ruck ball, tempo up, and they played against a high tempo team in Scarlets and completely out tempo them. I would guess you're right. I would guess that Racing are going to try and suck the life out of the game, slow it down, lots of scrums, line outs. You know, really big on the defensive line out side of things, like you said, putting pressure on Leinster set piece and just trying to take anything they can away from them.
I think, sorry, Kev.
It's just like the defensive ruck is also huge, because the Scarlets couldn't slow ball down, and because of that, Leinster score tries. If you get quick ball, the way Leinster play, they're going to score tries. So I think big job for like Nyanga and some of the back row guys to get in and slow that ball down and do anything they can to disrupt.
100%, and it even happens before that. It happens in the collision, and I suppose you look at Racing, and that's what they are. That's what they have. You know, they have big, strong athletes that are powerfully and quick, and in the collision they're very effective, you know. So if you do win that first collision, you know, that can, or the second, third collision, that can obviously help your defence. And just what you were touching on there from a point of view of, I agree with you. I think potentially in their own half, Racing, they will look to slow it down a small bit, from a kicking point of view, and, you know, creating two or three rocks just to slow the tempo down, get a good contestable kick in, get a good kick chase. But I think once they get into the Leinster half, I do think they look to up it a small bit, to be honest, Sean. I think they did that against Munster, and they did it effectively as well, you know, because I suppose when I talk about, you know, up in the tempo, they have that ability, they have the Vakatawa, they have the Nakawawa that, you know, have that X factor. They can step inside guys. We saw Vakatawa do it against Munster, Nakawawa with those offloads, you know. So when they get in behind, that's when they look to you know, to really up the tempo, and that's where Mascherano has been very effective and has come into his own this year, because he likes to play that noise. As I said, he's changed these games, so it's set up for a fascinating game, to be honest with you. I think
the mentioning Vakatawa there is that's a battle I'm really looking forward to, Ringrose and Vakatawa. Because Ringrose is probably good, a much better all-around game, but Vakatawa can create something out of nothing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Fijian with huge, huge close-in footwork that just allows him to get outside players or inside players. And, but you know, knowing Leinster's defence, that you know anything around the ball, they'd be so wary about where he steps back in. But in saying that, that's going forward defensively. There is some frailties in his defence, and I'm sure that's where Leo and Stewart and the coaching staff will identify, you know, from a point of view of where what areas to go after. Defensively, he can be got at, you know. So, but they have those players, and I think, you know, there's two players really. I look at Racing, and as I said, okay, they're not a team that traditionally start the season off on a massive high, because usually they make finals. When you make finals here, you're playing till quite late in the season, so your pre-season gets affected, and they're quite smart how they approach their season. So from the start of the season, as I said, they started off not you know, out of the blocks too quick. But two players I think that have really, I suppose, steadied them an awful lot since they've come in. You look at Donegh Ryan, and he's not just because he's someone I know, but you look at what he's brought to them from a point of view of set piece, and just talking to guys up there, and you know, the energy he's brought, the enthusiasm he's brought, and they're actually feeding off that, because you know, they're a team that Dan Carter's last year, they want to win a Heineken Cup, you know, or a Champions Cup. They're in the final 2 years ago. They've been there. They haven't won it. They've won a top 14 2 years ago. They're on a high for Dan. You know, they want to give him a good send-off. But the other player who, for me, who's brought a lot of subtlety to their game and just give them that balance, has been Pat Lambie. And again, he came in around October, November, and Dunica was obviously injured at the start. So I've just found they've got a lot of more maturity in their game, in their decision making, since the two of them have come along. And then you have the beauty of you know, starting Lambie, bringing Dan on, keeping Lambie potentially, if you're going after the game, to 12 or even 15, or taking him off depending what way you're, you know, if you're ahead or behind. So they have a lot of armors in their game, even going into Saturday. But I still think behind it all, Leinster will have too much.
So, to round it off, we've spent a lot of time talking about the Racing side of this, but Leinster, we've seen a number of different types of Leinster this season. The Leinster against Scarlets was straight, was very concentrating on what American football you might call north-south. It was straight in, dominate the collision, do very bad things to Tadhg Byrne to get him out of the game, and Byrne got very frustrated, but you do that. If someone is very good in that area, you take him out and it's up to the referee to stop it, and the referee didn't stop it. So someone like Dunnock Ryan from the Racing side would be there to stop that happening. But Kev, will we see Leinster play a much wider game earlier, or will we see them go straight down the throat again?
No, I think you'll see them doing the same thing. And like, they were winning collisions, but I think it was the little intricacies of what they were doing that actually allowed them to get over the gain line. I think if they just done simple, always one pass plays, you know, it's very hard. It's easy for defences. Someone like Racing, who, like Mike said, come off the line hard, they're big fellas, like, and they win those collisions. I think what you're seeing is little one and two pass plays amongst the forwards makes it really hard to defend.
Do you mean just like changing the angle slightly?
Changing the angle, rather than just picking off the base, pushing it to a guy who's maybe standing 5 metres away, who can then get around, you know, three or four defenders, which means that there's a bit more space for the next carrier. And yeah, just really smart in the way they do that. And I think, like, it all comes back, though, to the quick ruck ball. And I think part of it was almost an advantage for them having Tadhg Byrne playing in that game in a warped way. They had a guy, I think Geordie said it, I heard him on the press after the game, they had a guy in a blue scrum cap all week. And one of the academy guys got the absolute shit kicked out of him all week. And they had this unbelievable target. Anytime they saw the blue lid, they absolutely smashed him during the game. And I wonder who the blue lid is going to be for Racing now this week, because it's great to have a focus point like that. And I think the ruck, again, is just going to be so important, because Leinster's game depends on it. And what Mike's saying there is, if they can slow the ball down and push their big line speed on Leinster, I think Leinster will struggle a little bit more to get over the game line and do what they need to do. But yeah, it's going to be an absolutely fascinating contest. I think, like, Racing have amazing individuals. I think the Vakatawa-Ringrose comparison is great, because Vakatawa, like, he's an incredible player, but he's a bit loose, whereas Ringrose is very structured. Like, him and Henshaw, like, you know exactly what you're getting from them. They're so strong structurally in defence. And you know they're dependable on attack, whereas like Racing have these amazing individuals and you don't know what you're going to get from them. So yeah, it's going to be a fascinating contest.
Right, it's prediction time. Okay, call it, Kev.
Yeah, I think Leinster. I don't think by 10 though. I think it's going to be maybe 5 or 6 points.
Okay, Pat.
Yeah, confident in Leinster. Leinster are going to do a decent job, and I think Luke McGrath is going to be back for it as well, so that's going to help an awful lot too. So yeah, very confident in saying Leinster are going to win this.
Okay, Mike from France.
Yeah, I think Leinster. I think Pat made a good point there. I think Luke McGrath coming back as well. Leinster's their team, and I actually think Leinster by about 10. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Leinster. That's 4 for 4. We'll be back with your fan questions next.
Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end, perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing really. Remember Raj Kev in the Killiney, he used to have to bring 2 TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day.
We're going to take a look at some of your social media questions now. And thanks to Mike Prendergast, who had to go and actual, you know, do some work. I think there's a video session coming up. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @thyrugby and use the hashtag AskThy if you want to get in a question to the panel for next week. First one from Colm Grimes. A week on, a dozen or so articles and columns, yet still no official word from Connacht on Kieran Keane. Why, when and who next and how? What is going on Connacht? So last Monday, we walked out of the studio and about an hour afterwards, the story comes out that Kieran Keane is no longer going to be with Connacht. So after a year one of 3 years deal, he's gone. But there's been no official confirmation yet, Pat.
Yeah, it's very strange. It's like, unless they're waiting to have something positive to announce, but it's like everybody's accepted that Kieran Keane is gone.
We're sure of that, are we?
Yeah, like that's like all the talk from Connacht, you know, but yet there's been no official confirmation. So unless they're trying to figure out kind of terms of, you know, his departure or something like that, but
he hasn't locked himself into the change room, no.
Yeah, he's gone missing or something like that. And but it's so strange, like, to, you know, what a mess, like, because Keane was talking about at the end, like, he was kind of honest enough saying that last year there hadn't been a proper kind of review done, and you know, people have been kind of left hanging, so they're going to do everything properly, and the players are going to have a chance to have their feedback as well. And
certainly, I agree with you. He was talking about next season.
Yeah, yeah.
Until very, very recently. Mm.
Yeah.
And then suddenly the story is that he's gone. Kev, if a coach has signed up, it's very unusual for them to get just 1 year, and that was 1 year without a proper preseason.
Now, that's the surprise, the really surprising factor for me. And also coming in after Pat Lam, like, yeah. He's got a lot of unwinding to do in some ways, because Pat Lam was very, very fixed in his ways. It's also John Muldoon's last year, so he would have been planning, doing a lot of planning. And I think generally coaches get 2-3 seasons to put their stamp on things. Like Leo's first season wasn't amazing, you know, and he got his chance to put in place the structures he needed to be successful. And now look where Leinster are, and I think he's brought in the right coaching team and stuff. So I was really surprised, but I have no idea why it's happened, you know. Mm-hmm. And there was talk of player mutiny and things like that. But, I mean, who knows? The fact is, replacing someone like Pat Lam is hard.
Yep.
So the standard has been set extremely high.
Yeah.
And the players and the board at Connacht and everyone expects a certain level. And I just, it's hard to know where they're going to go from here.
Like, surely they can't let him go without having a decent plan in place. Like.
I wonder, did they? Maybe they found someone.
Yeah, and they just
Eddie
can't
O'Sullivan's been hanging around the sports ground in a dirty coat. Like.
He's always getting talked up, isn't he? Like, Eddie's the man again. Like, but
don't think it's him.
No, it's just like, so unless they're waiting again for the season to end, like, and then something can get announced, or whether there's an assistant from somewhere going to kind of head down and take
Speaking of which, Dan McFarland announced as the Ulster coach, but that is not as simple as it seems either, because he has a 9-month release clause, or sorry, a 9-month notice period with the SRU, And that is still being negotiated, it seems.
Ulster just don't like doing things the simple way, do they? I think it's a good appointment, though. Like, I've heard really good things about him from his time in Connacht, and also just the coaches he's worked under.
Yeah.
So, like, having worked with Pat Lam and now Gregor Townsend, I think he'll have, like, had a pretty amazing coaching journey and is probably ready now for the
next step up. Like,
be interesting to see, though. Is he, like, director of rugby like Kissy was, or is he more a Lancaster, like,
no,
strictly rugby coach?
It seems to be director of rugby, but again, I think what you're talking about is, what does that mean? Like, the title is the title, but what does it mean on the ground?
Yeah, so, like, say in Leinster, it works really well because Leo, you know, does the forwards coaching and a lot of the technical stuff, but, like, Lancaster's just a coach, just a rugby coach, and Leo deals with all the media, all the, and then that, you know, in Ulster was Kissy tried to take that on and just didn't necessarily work for him. He's an amazing rugby coach. So I just wonder what Dan McFarland has agreed with him, because it's actually quite an important definition. What does my role involve? And then who else can I bring in to try and take some of the heat off me? Or,
well, that's it. And especially this is when there's certain parallels to the Munster situation, where we knew that Van Graan was coming in, and then there was going to be a handover period. But it was very clear that a lot of the people in place already were going to stay in the coaching team. That does not seem to be clear yet in Ulster, and that's really important if they're going to have a longer transition, like if they can't buy him out. I'll point to Peter O'Reilly's in the Sunday Times, a little piece about this, and he said the Scots can stop feeling sorry for themselves for losing McFarland. They took McFarland from the Irish system to begin with. All his coaching development took place here, but there's no ignoring the small print on his contract. The IRFU need to buy him out, and Ulster need that to happen pronto. That is bang on.
Yeah, because that's, you see Andrew Trimble's retiring and Robbie Diak is going as well. There's almost an entire Ulster backline that's gone as well for next season. So just so much upheaval, like, and they can't have someone like a Dwayne Peel just kind of, you know, holding the tiller for 5 or 6 months until McFarland arrives
But you can use the upheaval as an opportunity, and I think that's what they have to do. But you're right, they need to get McFarland in there as soon as possible so he can actually start planning and working with people like Peel and stuff like that, and the senior players in Ulster. But I was chatting to Trimby last week, just before he announced his retirement, actually, and he said there's just a huge focus now in Ulster. They're looking south and they're saying, how can we develop our own talent? It's been a problem for us. We're not producing enough Stockdales.
Yeah.
And I know there's a huge intent there in putting focus on developing,
well, especially forwards.
School players. Yeah,
they need to keep forwards involved. Once they go sort of beyond the 19s, 20s, they need to get them and keep them and not let them wander away. Yeah. Whatever's going wrong in that chain, something is going wrong. It's really interesting that Trimby was talking to you about that.
Yeah, and I think, like, there's a big rugby playing population up north as well. I just think maybe the structures, I think that they can probably learn a little bit from what Leinster have been doing and try and produce some extra talent.
Okay. So that's two provinces down, and we spent a lot of time in Leinster. So Munster's time. From Ivor Pabst, what next for Munster to get to the top table? What do they need? A new 10 or a Pacific utility back or wing? A marquee lock? To tick off a couple of these, they've got to a semi-final in the Pro 14. But that's what Munster would expect minimum, I'd suggest. New 10, JJ was picked for a couple of games in a row here.
Yeah.
Is JJ the future?
It seems to be that they're just going with it now, like, and just rolling the dice and just letting Hanrahan learn and see if he's the man for them. Because he played the full game there against Edinburgh the other day and benefited from it, and he'll probably start against Leinster as well. So maybe they're finally, Keighley had such a great season, but then just had a bad game, in the Champions Cup, like when they got knocked out. So maybe they've just said, okay, maybe it's time to invest in JJ, like give him a few games, see if he's the guy to change it for us. I saw Rog, and he was talking in the Irish Examiner about how come Munster aren't going for Joey Carberry, and here's a guy who's kind of given out in the past about guys swapping provinces, but he was saying, if Carberry's on the go, can we have him? Like, you know, so
it's amazing how
he's saying we, is he?
Yeah.
From New Zealand, like.
Yeah. Well, marquee lock. I mean, they've lost Grobler. Mm-hmm. There's really lessons that can be learned from that situation. And by that I mean, to be clear, that if you're going to sign someone who has that on his record, as in the drugs offence, please don't act that it's weird for people to ask questions about it. You need to get ahead of that thing. Mm-hmm. But look, he actually did well in the few games he played. But they have got Ty Burn coming in.
Yeah, that's a good sign.
But then you're looking at what? Holland, Burn, probably playing a bit of six as well, and Klein for next season. So they need someone else.
Yeah. But like, in answer to the direct answer to the question, I think they are at the top table. They got to the semi-final of Europe. They're in semi-final of their league. And I actually think they have the squad, and they would have had the squad to beat Racing. I think guys like Farrell and Tote, like playing in that game, it's completely different. And I think, you know, Sammy Arnold and some of those guys have stepped up this year, and they were okay against Toulon at home, you know. But it's a different beast away in France. You need your big players. And I think having a full roster to pick from, or even an extra three or four of their marquee players for that game, would have made a big difference.
Yeah.
And the couple of signings they're bringing in are big as well. I think they're in a good place. I wouldn't change a huge amount. I think that the 10 thing, I'm glad to see them that they seem to be backing a horse now and going with it, because there was an element.
We're saying that after another couple of games. Like, this could change.
It could. But like,
well, there's going to be some hell of a test. Imagine JJ now, they'll be after him. Like, talk about a guy with a blue scrum crap on him. They'll be going after JJ at the RDS. So if he's going to survive, then that's going to be a big game for him.
Yeah, he needs a test like that. And like, Keatley's been an unbelievable servant for them. But the fact is, he's getting older now, so they need to bring someone else in. And, the out half of whose name has eluded me, the New Zealand
Blaendal.
Yeah. I mean, you can't just sit there waiting for him to come back. You know, he's going to be the answer.
Well, they've done that once, twice. Yeah, I think the main thing is that if Tyler Blaendal can get that fit first, that's a huge battle for him.
Yeah,
there are other battles about playing time, but getting back to be able to play is a big battle.
Yeah.
Okay, last one. Interesting story in this weekend's the rugby paper, which maybe because it was a bank holiday, people mightn't have seen. Last week, first the Telegraph reported that Paddy Jackson and Stuart Olding were going to sail.
Mm-hmm.
Then Sale released a statement saying that there was no truth in these rumours whatsoever. Right? But yesterday, the rugby paper's Neil Fissler said that Paddy Jackson had signed heads of terms for Sale before this statement from Sale was made, that Sale were actually backing out of it after the public outcry. And they even include the terms of what they say the heads were signed for, and they say that they were unable to establish that Stuart Olding had signed heads, but had verbally agreed same for another contract, and that perhaps if Sale are backing out, there's compensation due. It's a very interesting story, Pat.
Yeah, and the rugby paper is often good for pulling out decent exclusives as well. So. There had been talk about that, and you know, like that something had been sorted. And it's funny with the Olding thing, maybe he had just hadn't got over in time to sign what Jackson had signed, but they seem pretty confident. And then Sale don't have their history of saying some guy's not going to sign for them. They've done it with Faf de Klerk, they've done it with James O'Connor saying this guy's not coming, and then the guy's arrived. Like, so even their initial statement, they were saying when we sign someone, we'll let you know. Like, so.
They said our search continues for top class players.
And
the search could continue with the same players. You never know.
Yeah.
But the it is interesting because there's another line in there which is fascinating. So Neil Fister says that the players, both Jackson and Olding, were leaving Sale's training centre when Sale denied that they were being signed. that's interesting. We're going to have more talk about these. It's going to be linking them with different clubs. We're going to get lots of stories. I would be surprised if he signed in the UK and Ireland, but I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's just kind of, it'll happen with each side, and Sale have probably, maybe it took them a bit by surprise, like that now all of a sudden they've got this storm for 2 or 3 days where they knew it might be an issue, but they didn't know it was going to be this big of an issue, which kind of might be
it makes you wonder who floated the story in the Telegraph. Was it a little trial balloon?
Yeah, and just to kind of see what the reaction is to it then, and I'd be surprised as well. Like,
okay, I think we'll leave it there. Thanks to Pat, to Kev and Mike, to Alan Lachman for producing, and Shane Dempsey and Fiona Delaney were on production. We'll be back next Monday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud and every good podcast app. Get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. We're looking forward to a Champions Cup final. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe. Brought to you by Innocent Super Smoothies. On the bright side.
To the short side. Oh, it's got to the short side.
back before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi Rob, Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
And Ringrose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose